Start your day at the Turnaway, Northwest London, Tuesday, 30th of Tammuz, 12th of July, by Ari Tumim Schlitter, property, brokers, agents, and flippers.
Good morning. Thank you all for listening, inviting me to share a few words of the Torah. I always discuss with myself. At the end of Parshas Balak, just before Bilam's final polemic, there's an interesting interaction between Balak and Bilam. It says, Vayicharaf Balak, Bilam, he's furious, Balak with Bilam. He says, I called you to assist me to curse my enemies, and not only have you not cursed them, you're going to bless them. Va'ato brachacha al nukimecho, just get out of here. Omarati kabedach abedcho, I said I was going to bestow lavish honor upon you, but Hashem has prevented you from receiving any COVID. So Bilam answers back, you sent me messages and I told them, immediately, even if you pay me all the money in the world, what do you want from me? So the question is, what's going on here? Because he's challenging him, says, I asked you to do a job. Gave you something to do, and you went, and you did the opposite. So what's the answer? I told you. Okay. So I've seen the explanation brought down that originally, when Bilam was summoned by Balak, he said, I can't come. So he was summoned a second time. And he was promised tremendous cover, kachabed achabedcho. He said, I'll ask Hashem. And Hashem said to him the second time, go. And Rashi says, if you think you're going just to get paid, okay, so go along. There's a shayla that we're trying to speak about. What happens if somebody gets called a doctor, gets called, there's a sick patient, and he needs treatment, and they call the doctor. The doctor comes and administers whatever's necessary to be administered, but the patient doesn't recover. Is he entitled to get paid for what he's done? So Ramban says, the reason why you pay a doctor is for him to do what's ever necessary to come, attempt whatever you can attempt. Obviously, it might be successful, it may not be successful. But either way, if he came, he did what he was supposed to do, so he's done the job, he gets paid. So this was the argument between Bilam and Balak. What was the job? I said, I'm going to pay you a tremendous amount. What was the job description over here? So he said, I called you to curse my enemies. And you haven't done that, on the contrary, you're going to bless them. He says, no, I'm like a doctor. I told you, I can only come along and do my best. Whatever Hashem is going to let me, I can't do anything about it. You want to call me, you want me to come? I've come to get the schar. So therefore, no, I've come, I've attempted, I'm trying to get the schar.
But
he didn't give the bracha. No, he says, I told you that lo yuchal labe is pi'ah Hashem, that's a tibur over libi. So what am I coming for? I'm coming. Come and try.
Possibly,
this Rashi. The Rashi right at the beginning is on Pasuk Chof. And the second time he's called Im Likroi Lecho. Hashem, this is where Hashem speaks. You have it. Pasuk Chof. Vayomer Kima Bilam Laila Vayomer Elohim Likroi Lecho Bo Anoshim. On that Rashi Im Likroi Lecho Im Akpiyos Shechol So Atol Tiras Ka. So the point being, it's very often becomes necessary to establish what exactly was the job description, what was done, is he entitled to get his payment? And the scenario that I'm talking about today is slightly different, but has a relevance to, in part, to this question. And that is, the question arises very often when you have two people, a buyer and a seller. And somehow, a third person gets involved in between. And one way or another, we'll discuss the various options, the third person in between is able to alter the deal. He thinks to himself, there's somebody selling a property, there's a guy buying the property, they're all happy, so we can change the arrangement slightly and I'll also be happy. So he changes the deal, he's the one who's going to benefit from that, and the shayla is, how do you look at it in halacha? And it's nogea to several different aspects. First of all, the question is, when you have an agent, a property agent in the middle, and he alters the terms of the sale, that means the marshal, the seller was prepared to sell at a set price, and he goes and tells the buyer the price is really higher than what the property is being sold for, and he intends to pocket the difference. So the first question is, has he done his job? He's taking a commission, don't forget. He wants to claim his commission. Has he done his job? His job is to find a buyer, find a seller, provide the relevant terms, and connect the two people together. And he's done something different. He's altered the inventory. Does he get his commission? Does he collect his job? Does he collect what he's putting in the bill for? The second question is there grounds here to undermine the sale? Person bought the property, and he paid, let's say, Marshall, the fellow selling the property was selling it for $500,000, $500,000, and the agent came and told the buyer it's $550,000. And he bought it for $550,000, he was happy to buy it for $550,000. And the owner was happy to $500,000, he got $500,000, and the guy got the $50,000, kept the $50,000 in his pocket. But the person buying the property says, had I known that it was really being sold for $500,000, I would never have bought it. Similarly, the guy selling it says, had I known I could have achieved $550,000, I would never have sold it for $500,000. So there could be a ground to undermine the actual sale. There could be shailos of Eino. It could also have an impact on the validity of the sale. But the main question that I want to talk about is really the aspect of who does this extra money belong to. In a scenario like that, where somebody in between has increased the revenue which is brought in for the sale of a property, who does that increase in revenue belong to? Okay, we'll see in a minute. Where's the? It may well belong to the seller who sold his property. It may well belong to say that the buyer can say, no, the seller sold it for 500,000. You stumped at 550 off me. I want my 50,000 back. The guy in the middle says, no, listen, you are happy to pay 550, you are happy to sell 500, what's it all stay for me? Yeah, well, 50,000, Kessish Faginan. Yeah, you are happy, he's happy, I'll also be happy. And I'm all as a tiner that we should split it. 50-50, we'll see why, what basis in halacha there might be to split it. And there's also a fourth nekuda, which also can be relevant sometimes, a question of professional negligence. And that is, sometimes the person gets the deal done, he's being paid, he has a conflict of interest, and therefore he does the deal in a way which serves his own interest best. He could have achieved a higher price for the seller, he could have achieved a better price for the buyer, depending on who he's acting for. And therefore, whoever's paying him, theoretically has a claim of professional negligence against him. Says, you could have sold my property for more money, I paid you to find me a buyer. I paid you to find me the best buyer you could find. And you didn't, so now is there a claim against him for damages? So that potential profit that I could have achieved, I have a claim against him for that.
You did say the price.
Amoli fixes the price, Amoli says gets the best price, he doesn't. Yeah. Well, there's various situations how it crops up. I'll tell you three stories, they're all true stories, and then we'll analyze them a bit with the sources in halacha. So the first case is a straightforward case. The shadchan was fully transparent. Someone gave a property to sell. He said, I want a set price for it. And he comes back to the seller and he says, you know, I've got good news for you. Not only have you got a buyer, I've got you a buyer for a higher price than you're looking for. Let's split the difference. And we'll see in halacha what the makor for that claim is, and if it's taka valid argument in this particular instance. Another case, another story that took place is, a fellow approached somebody and says, if I could achieve this and this price for my house, if I could achieve, I don't know what it was, if I could get $250 for my house, Manchester, if I could get $250 for my house, then I would... I would sell it and move. Okay, fine. If you know anybody who's interested, pay $250. And he bumps into another guy who, before you can even say anything to him, he says, you know, I'm looking to buy a property. If Vermosa, that property, if I could get that for 300,000, I'd chop it. So this guy's thinking, same property. The fellow said he'd sell it for 250. I've got somebody lined up who wants to buy it for 300. You know what? I'll be the buyer for 250, and I'll sell it on for 300, and we'll do that. He's done that one in his head in about 30 seconds. And fine. And Vaitika Gangan. Mad Dinoi. And a third story.
If he bought a bit of profit, it's done nothing wrong. And if you tell the buyer, I can get you this for 300, pay the.
He says, I'll do whatever I want. Whatever you want me to do, I'll do. Just give me the 50,000. Yeah, exactly. You tell me what to do, I'll do it. I get my 250. I get the 50,000. You tell me what to do, I'll do it. Yeah. So what do you have to do to get his 50,000? So, and the third story is from an investor's point of view. A gentleman gave his money to somebody who finds properties, invests properties. And he said, do me a favor, here's some money, buy me a property, rental property, get it rented out, and bring the rental income. And he gave him the schum, he gave him whatever money he had to invest, bought him a property, and the rent's coming in. A number of years later, the fellow gets hold of the original land registry documents, and he finds that the property was bought for 20,000 less than what he had handed to the fellow. Call up the fellow, he said, listen, remember, I gave you this and this amount of money, and I asked you to buy the property for me, and you bought the property for me, but now I found out that actually it was cost 20,000 less than the money that I gave you. What's going on? The fellow says to me, I don't understand. I don't source property. Oh, you know, I have to understand how I work. I buy property, I refurbish it, I put in a tenant, and then when it's all off, I have to go, my sir, I sell it on. And that's what happened to you. The original buyer, the original price, that's got nothing to do with you. That's what I bought it for. I refurbished it. He says, what are you talking about? I gave you the money. I bought the property. If there's a refurbishment, give me an exact detail of all the costs. I'll reimburse you for any expenditure that you had. But the property, my property can't just add on 20,000. My sir, show up, Tachoy. So the key to all of these questions is to understand the title and the role of the person in the middle. In halacha, there are three possible identities, three different hats the person in the middle can be wearing. Sometimes a person in the middle is a shliach. A shliach, we translate in English as an agent. But the term agent in English is much broader than the halachic connotation of the word shliach. A shliach is shluchei shel odom kemoisoi. That means the moicha isn't present, the shliach, someone who is in his place, is acting in his place, he's been authorized to act in his place, and he's the one who's actually affecting the sale because he's a shliach. You have a power of attorney, you have the idea of an agent where the agent is actually doing the sale. That's one category of person in the middle, shliach. Call him an agent. Then you have another category, and that is a shadchan. A shadchan's job is to connect two people together. You want to buy, you want to sell. You don't know who the buyer is, you don't know who the seller is. I'll find you a buyer, I'll find you a seller. Connect you together, speak. He may act to facilitate the lines of communication between them, but essentially, he's just passing on communication between one side and the other side. Connect the two together, and you buy, you sell, and you do the sale. But he's not actually part of the sale. He's not a shliach. He's not affecting the sale. He's just hooking the two people up together. And the third possibility is, you can have his taka, the person in the middle, taka becomes both a buyer and a seller. He buys the property, and he sells on, he flips on the property. In which case, he's actually acting as a buyer and acting as a seller also, simultaneously. And the crux of all these shayas is to pinpoint what is going on here. What exactly are we dealing with here? Now, what are the sources in halacha for these for these type of shayas? You have a case in Simon Kupay Gimel, Simon Kupay Gimel, of a shliach who's sent to buy something. Somebody gives some money to his shliach, sends him to the store to buy a bag of sugar, a kilo of potatoes. And when he gets there, the person gives him more than is normally given for that price. Instead of taking a kilo of potatoes, take an extra quarter of a kilo. Who does that belong to, that extra hisafah? Says the Shulchan Aruch, Cholkin. It gets split between the Shliach and the Mishaleach. That's one halacha. So this would be seen to be grounds for the argument we saw before, where the man in the middle says, I only hear the case of Shulchan Aruch, there was the seller, there was the buyer, there was a Shliach in the middle, there was an extra profit to be made, undefined, so we split it. However, there's another halacha, Simakuf Behei, which is bought by the Truas Harosh, which is bought from originally, so the source is the Truas Harosh. And that halacha says, a person gives an item to be sold. He hands somebody an item and he says, I'd like you to sell it for this and this price. He tells him what price he wants to achieve, and the Shliach goes and sells the item, and he achieves a higher price than he was instructed. He manages to receive more money than he's instructed. Who does that money belong to? Says the Shulchan Aruch, it belongs to the Mishaleach, to the sender. And the Torah, the Sma brings down, it's talking about a case where even where the sender was aware that the value could have been achieved, and he was willing to sell it at a discounted price in order to do a quick sale, and nonetheless, it was sold for more, he gets all the money. Now the two halachas don't seem to be compatible. How do you reconcile these two halachas? And the truth is, it is based on the Gemara in Kesubos, Daf Tzadi Gimel, and the Gemara there makes a distinction which is brought in Shulchan Aruch, and it's very clear. And the point is like this, the Gemara says there's a fundamental chiluk between something which is a dovah sheyesh lekitzvah and a dovah she'ein lekitzvah. Something which has a set fixed price to something which has no fixed price, it's variable. What's the chiluk? The difference is as follows. Where something has a fixed price, so we know what the sale exactly is. We know what a bag of sugar costs. We know what a kilo of potatoes costs. We know what the item you're buying or you're selling costs. We know what the sale is. And therefore, if you've given extra, it doesn't become part of the sale. If you go to the shop to buy a bag of sugar, you send your kid to the shop, and he buys a bag of sugar, and the shopkeeper gives him a candy or toffee or something to take home, that candy or that toffee isn't part of the sale. The upshot is you paid a pound for a bag of sugar and a candy. So you paid a pound for a bag of sugar, and he gave it as an extra, not part of the sale, a candy. So where's the dollar sheyesh lekitzvah? The hisafah isn't considered to be part of the sale. The shliach bought it for whatever the going rate is, whatever the fixed market price is. There was a hisafah from the shopkeeper for whatever reason. That hisafah is not considered to be part of the sale. So Avdeim state chokin, what is the basis for chokin is actually a machlokes rishonim. So some rishonim explained that pshat is azoi, that this hisafah came as a result of two elements.
It's not
ribbis. There's no halvah going on here. It's all an instant transaction. It's a sale.
So two for the price of one.
Two for the price of one. Or the half price. So then Pashas, it does become part of the sale. Two for the price of one. Each one is half price.
Buy one,
so selling them cheaper.
Buy one, get one free
is also the same. Yeah. The person that tells sometimes gets stuck because they don't know if it's buy two for the price of one or buy one, get one free.
Okay,
yeah.
So three for two, he wants one.
But
three for two, he wants one, so I'll buy another one, so I'll get that. So here's one to achieve it.
Okay, so there's all these are the shayas. This is what the makor for understanding all these shayas is. How, what is part of the sale, what achieved it, who achieved it, and why you get it. How much inking? In a case where I give you an item where the price, whatever the price is, and I ask you to go and sell it for me, so you're now doing the mechira. The shliach is a shliach on this sale. And he says, I gave you this item and I asked you to sell it for four. The shliach goes to the market and he says, I'm selling you this item for six. He's a shliach on the mechira. It's as if the meicher was standing here. Shulchan Aruch goes here. The meicher is saying, I am selling this item for six. Who does the item belong to? The item belongs to the mishaleach. The item was sold by the mishaleach representative for six. So his item was sold for six. He sold the item. The money of the sale belongs to the seller. Therefore, that six belongs, that any hesafa of the sale, part of the sale, is going to belong to the seller. There's another halacha, converse halacha. And that is, somebody has a large debt. He's not paid it for a while. And his friend says, if you pay back the, you know, why don't you pay back the debt? I'll try, just give me the money. I'll try and negotiate a better rate for you to try and get a discount or sort it out or close up the debt. So, it's okay, good idea. So how much do you owe? He says, £100,000. So he gives £100,000. And the fellow goes to the creditor and says, you know, Yen owes you £100,000. Why don't you, he's willing to settle that up. Oh, but you know it's difficult for him. Be a mensch, give the guy a bit of a break. It's easier for you than for him. He's in more difficult situations. Yeah. If you get it for £90,000, you're doing well. Close the deal now, I'll sort it, we'll wrap it up. £90,000, close the deal. And he's got £100,000 in his pocket from the end that's given him to sort out whatever he can, but he owes £100,000. And the end of thinks about it for a minute, and he says, £90,000 for £90,000 if I get it. Within the hour, done. The fellow says, Basel Bracha, £90,000, here you go, the Chayvah discount. He's left with £10,000 change in his pocket. Who does that money belong to, that £10,000 change?
If the loiva had 100 to pay back, why was he sending the shliach?
To try and negotiate. Oh, but Lamaisi owes £100,000. Lamaisi owes £100,000. She owes £100,000.
He could have repaid him.
He could have paid. Let's see what I can do.
To do a better deal.
What do you mean?
That's why he sent him. To do a better deal.
To
get a discount or something. That's why he sent him.
Try negotiating the discount if you can.
So why should it be? What's that one?
The shliach thinks, well, listen, you would have been prepared to pay £100,000, yeah, if necessary. You would have been prepared to £100,000. I sorted it out, so let me keep the money. So, no, you're right. The money in this instance definitely belongs to Shulchan Aruch Paskens. It belongs to the Mishaleach. And the reason for that is the money is Bershusei Demorei Koi. It's not changed ownership. It was belonged to the sender. It was given for a purpose if necessary. If that purpose becomes unnecessary, so the money still belongs to the original sender. It's never changed ownership. The title never changed. So therefore it belongs to the original sender. Now, the shaila inevitably normally becomes what exactly is the role of the person in the middle. So in the instance of somebody who's appointed as an agent to do the deal, so we're seeing that whatever the deal is arranged by the shliach, that is considered to be the deal. So if a person is an agent to sell something, and he sells it for a certain price, so then that is what the item is sold for. If he alters the terms of the sale, be it knowingly or unknowingly, he's affected the sale. So that means as follows, when he tells the purchaser the price is 250, 550, whatever it is, that is the price of the sale, and therefore the money will belong to whoever sold the item. If there's any extra money, it belongs to the person who sold it, because you're an agent, you sold the item was sold for a certain price, so that money belongs to the seller. Now, you have cases where the person is not an agent, but just a shadchan. And there's a very strong, I mean, people say to me, you know, I just want to tell you, people say to me, you know, in England, these stories can't happen. Yeah, you got solicitors, you got bank things, they happen, they've happened, they're happening, they're going to happen. If you want to know how they happen, that'll have to speak to you after the shiur about. But the fact is, these stories happen. The shadchan alters the price. He manages to save an extra payment in cash, gave it to me, got to the solicitors. And Lamaisa, the Shadchan has altered the price. So now, there's a very strong argument to say, here it doesn't become part of the sale. The Shadchan provided misinformation. He said the property is being sold for this and this amount. In fact, that was incorrect, because the seller was willing to sell it for a low amount. So he's passed you information which is incorrect. The buyer provided the money, whatever the money is necessary, for the sale. If he's provided extra money, which is unnecessary for the sale, so that money now needs to be returned to him. So be he the person in the middle of a shatran, be he a person in the middle of a shliach, the money certainly doesn't belong to him. It belongs either to the seller, or maybe needs to be returned to the buyer. But what happens? The person in the middle argues, no, I'm not an agent, I'm not a broker, I bought it and I flipped the property and I sold it. I'm a buyer and a seller. So any profit in the between, it belongs to me. So there's a few ways of testing that. Well, first of all, normally the first question is that you're claiming commission also, right? You want to get paid for your job at your 1%, or your 2%, whatever it is. So if you're a buyer and a seller, you don't get paid commission. You bought the property. You sold the property. Who are you taking commission for? What are you taking commission from, Paul? Because you're the buyer? You don't take a commission on a property that you bought yourself. You don't take a commission on a property that you sold yourself. Another question is, whose money did you use to purchase the property? You claim that you bought the property and you sold it. You flipped the property. Well, whose money did you use? You used the buyer's money to buy the property for yourself and then sell it on to him. What terms of sale did you arrange with the buyer and the seller? Were they in terms of sale? But the truth is, these points, while they are useful indicators, they do sometimes fail. Because you can have a circumstance where you have back-to-back, where you have somebody doing a simultaneous exchange and completion. They do an exchange and completion on the same day, and they use the same solicitors to do an exchange and completion to pass it on, and the funds are coming from via the same solicitor from the buyer to the seller. So there's no question of whose funds are you using, because he has to give me the money and I have to give him the money, and it's all going through the same solicitor. So you can't tie up, you're using Yenna's money to buy the property for yourself. And so the ikkar crux of the shayla is, where does the responsibility for the sale lie? Who's taking responsibility for the sale? If something goes wrong with the property and there's a fault and the end buyer has a claim, who is he going to go back to? Does he go back to the man in the middle, or does he go back to the original seller? If the responsibility lies with the original seller, so then it's clear that the person in the middle didn't buy it and didn't sell it. Now, the person in the middle very often is my head. It's very important to be clear on this, because very often they'll say, it's true, I didn't buy it and I sell it, but had I known that I'm not going to get the money in the middle, I would have bought it and sold it. I could have easily bought it and sold it myself. I had the money at the time. I would have bought it and sold it. What did I need to pass on for? And the answer to that is, you should have, but you didn't. It's true, there's no migu that doesn't entitle you to get the money. If you didn't buy the property, you didn't buy it. If you bought the property, you bought the property. The fact that you could have done it. And the other argument is, says, what do you mean? You want to pay me 1% for this deal? So do you know how much work I have to do for this deal? There's no other agent that would have got you this price, because no one worked as hard as I did. You have no idea where I advertised it, what I did. I didn't just put it online. I didn't just put it in the booklets. I put it on social media. I did this and this. I called up Vienna. I had my contacts. No other agent for 1%. No other agent for 1% would have done what I'd done. So it might be true, and you may have a claim to say you had extra expenditure, you put in extra effort, perhaps you're entitled to a higher salary. But that doesn't make the property in the middle yours. If you just want to recap on the three stories, and we'll just talk you through them quickly. So the first case was where the Shadchan was fully transparent, and he tells the seller, I achieved the higher price that you wanted, let's split the difference. So that's clearly based on the Halacha in Hilchos Shluchim, which says, when there's an extra, the Shliach and the Shaleach split the profits. So he's clearly based on that argument, he wants to get 50% of the profit here. And we've seen that argument in this instance is going to fail, because in this instance it becomes part of the sale. Where the price is part of the sale, it's not a 50-50 deal. The second story was where he was aware that there's a buyer who wants to sell for a lower price and a purchaser who wants to sell for a higher price. The answer to that is yes, you can buy the property for the lower price and you can sell it on for the higher price. But you're taking the risk and the responsibility and you're doing whatever's necessary it involves. So if for some reason the final seller doesn't back out, or the final buyer doesn't materialize, you may be left holding the baby. And the third case was, he gave him money to buy the property, and the fellow turned around to him and said, no, I'm not a property, I don't source properties, I buy, refurbish and sell. So that needs to be inspected to see whether under the circumstances the taco holds out. Thank you for listening.
Good.